So you had to distribute.
So it was semi-clerical and semi-hard work.
And that was your first job after
my
the war?
My first job, and I've always said, well, I'm handling these oily hands, handling these starter motors, what filthy they were, and I was handling these things and checking them one to another. And I had a little, the paperwork as well, and they wanted something with clerical experience as well. And it was, wasn't a basic job. I had, it was like, I was next down from the floor. But it was hard work, and it was demanding work, because I was bending down and turning my body, and I was on the move, and when I had a break, I was not glad for the break. And it was so hard that after the first month, I thought, so what the hell am I doing this for here? So this, and I packed it in, and I thought I had to hit Birmingham anyway, and I went to London. And I went to London in October 1947. And I thought, London's a better place. Goodbye, Birmingham. Hello, London. And I was walking down Praed Street in London, and I saw an empty shop, and there was a notice on the door. Are you an ex-serviceman looking for work? Step inside. And I stepped inside this empty shop with my officer's raincoat on, because it was a Saturday morning, raining stairs, and I felt really snug and comfortable, you know, and showing off. And a trilby hat on, and this officer with a great coat, and that must have been exactly as an officer. So he said, well, I've heard a captain looks like you. He said, you come out of Paddington Station to direct you to the British Legion ex-servicemen's employment centre in Ethelstone Square. He says, jump on bus number so-and-so, and they'll take you down to the Victoria Station. And immediately we have the Victoria Station, there's an employment bureau there. Tell them I sent you. In fact, when you're on your way, I'll phone them. So I got down there and he said, what were you? Were you an officer? I said, no, I said, I was a major. I was a major at one point, but I said, I finished up as a CSM. He said, well, how have you got your officer's coat? Well, I said, I bought them when I was an acting RSM in Milan. He said, well, you sound an intelligent bloke to me. He said, go now up to Pall Mall headquarters and see Mr. Spong and take this to you. He said, they're looking for chaps, he said, to have a 6 months course on law, medicine, and tribunal work. And he says, we usually take on offices only in that job. But he said, I think that you'll fill the bill for the next time you go one. See Mr. Spong and do it now, he said, because they're up there till 1 o'clock. By now, it's about 12 o'clock. So I went up, last episode of Pall Mall, saw Mr. Spong, and he said, start on Monday. And he showed me, took me downstairs, this vast open office, PAT department, Pensions Appeal Tribunal Department. He said, here you're going to have a 6 months grounding, handling files at the Charlie Star, learning all about tribunals, learning about diseases, learning about law, statutory tribunals, he said, active parliament, British Legion, fighting pensions cases against the Ministry of Pensions, which disallowed them. He said, good luck to you. He said, you'll finish up in the courts if you pass your 6 month probation. As a Legion, Pensions Appeal Tribunal representative, a senior position. And that was my job. And I took it. And that's where I met my dear wife.
And how long did you do that job?
Well, in this Legion headquarters, there were officers of every rank and arm of the service. And one of the rules there was no fraternizing with the birds. But of course, I was engaged to Joy, and everybody was aware that of this romance, actually. I did very well at the courts, I got to work. And I had many successes. And I knew all the tribunals, and I just didn't attend one tribunal. I had London, and there were about six tribunals in London. And through the year 1947, 1948, 1949, I went to more than one tribunal. building, and they all knew me at the end, and I knew all them, all the tribunals, all the tribunals were very important chaps. Number one in the tribunal was an ex-retired colonial judge, and those are their colonies. And all these colonies, you know, the British Empire, they had judges, you know, but they were all back in London, they were retired colonial judges. They had the knowledge, the law, so they were the number one in the tribunal. Number two was a doctor, a medical doctor. A medical doctor would be in the services, in the arm of the service on the appellant's case. If the appellant was a sailor, the doctor would be an ex-naval surgeon or something, you know. And the third chap was a severely disabled ex-serviceman. He lost an arm or suffered grievous body injuries and was given a job because of his inability to work. He was a tribunal military member who belonged to either the infantry or the artillery or the RAF or the Navy, depending upon the appellant's arm of the service. So that was a tribunal. Not only, I mean, these tribunals were dealing with judgments dealt by Lord Justice Denning, who at the time was the Chief Lord Justice of Queen, made the rules and the laws about decisions regarding war pensions. He was a marvellous man. And so he fought a refused case thrown out by the Ministry of Pensions. And he fought for the appellant, for the chap who refused the pension, on behalf of the Legion headquarters. So you got a Legion against the Ministry of Pensions. Tribunals made the decisions on your presentation of the case. I left the job. I was doing 8 cases a day, 40 cases a week. I was given all my cases on a Friday after when I was trained after 6 months. I trained on the course earlier under the wing of somebody who experienced for that person and on my own. I took 40 cases a week, and I used to collect all my portfolios of cases on a Friday. Proceeding Friday, so that I could sort of deal with the case list from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 8 today to the next week. And I had a couple of lodges in Chiswick, and I used to read every night my cases for tomorrow. I turned up at the tribunal the following morning at 10 o'clock. In Aldwych. Bush House was one place of the annex of the North Courts in Kingsgate, another one. Stowe Street in London was another one. But that's where the tribunals
were. What were the nature of the cases? I mean, what were the Ministry of Pensions rejecting? What illnesses and so on?
For example, you got to learn, actually, you were given by regional quarters a set of medical books, which put on the floor was about 2'6" high for a start. So that all your medical books, your set of books that you could refer to any disease or disability in these books and read about them from the start. So you had to learn about the medicine. Now, anybody who was getting on in years, they become hypochondriacs, you know. For example, angina pectoris, you know, bad heart, pain in the heart. The first one was pain in the left arm. This is a reflective pain from the heart, really. So that anybody with a pain in the heart, you learn all the symptoms, and so because you knew all the symptoms, you have a bloody disease. The old chaps, anyway, you know, they all thought they had bad hearts. They all thought they had cancer of the pancreas and so forth, because they knew the symptoms. But I was young, and I knew that I was healthy, and I wasn't affected like that. But I dealt with the judgments, mainly. Lord Justice Denning's decisions of the past. I mean, all those other
yes, ones. But in terms of your case, the cases that you dealt with, you would have what predominantly were the cases that the government was trying to get out of paying money for?
They were out of hand. If any serviceman of any army service put in for wrote to them and said, I'm ex-army, I've got soldiers wrong with me. Willy-nilly out of hand. No one say man, as it was then. Minister of Pensions would send a notice and say, we refute what you say. We would not give you a pension. You've got the right to apply before the tribunal. You can either apply a solicitor, barrister, or a an ex-service organisation, namely the British Legion, or the Royal Air Force Association, or SAFA, Soldier Service of Airmen Family Association. See, so, and the Legion wanted to know, eventually, of every case, bar none, of pensions that were refused by the Ministry of Pensions, and said to the Ministry of Pensions, in their hands, send us every refusal, bar none. We want to know every case. We would then contact the appellant through our Legion branches to say that we would represent the tribunals. And all the papers sent to him, he would say, tarry not, don't worry, just have it at your local branch, who would post it to us in Kampal, and we will do the necessary for you. We will take up the cudgels and take your case from beginning to end and go to the tribunal with you. You sit on our right and we represent the tribunals and present your case according to our knowledge. And our knowledge was of vital importance to you because although perhaps you wouldn't be aware of what we had to say, there were far-reaching decisions made on your behalf. And we could transform what apparently was a hopeless case into a winner.
Did you think that the government was trying to skimp
I think we're a load of rotters. Whichever government is in, they're all like willy-nilly. They don't care about you after you've been in the army and come out. After you've served your country, they are... Well, I can't believe how one government, Tory, all Labour, all Liberal, can turn against the chap who's fought so hard and gives muscle.
So you felt that generally they were just trying to penny pinch and save.
And they, into this day, they begrudge giving you anything for all.
So can you remember any cases from this period that stick in your mind of where you said
countless
that?
Countless cases of unfair treatment.
Such as?
Oh, I mean to say, you know, chaps who have been in the hands of Japanese prisoners of war, you know, and have come home after suffering privations, enduring privations of the Japanese prisoners of war, clubbed behind the head. And they put in a claim for diabetes. They would never allow a diabetes mellitus claim. They would always say, inherited, in your genes, father and mother, uncle, grandfather, search back and you'll find it somewhere. But not so. I used to send facts to important harvesting specialists and say, this chap was a prisoner of war of the Japs. He was clubbed to the head 3 times by the Japs. The cause of diabetes is changes in the pancreas. Do you think this ill treatment, a clubbing in the back of the head, would cause changes in the pancreas to produce diabetes? That kid replied, yes. That was professional, yes, confirmation that it could happen. I would submit that against the Ministry of Pensions, who would say, oh, I'm going to complain and appeal against this, but he couldn't appeal or complain against a medical opinion by a harvesting specialist that changes in the pancreas could be brought about by clubs to the base of the brain. And when that was proved, every diabetes case that had evidence of brain injury or maltreatment like that was allowed. Without a hearing, you'd merely say, Lord Justice of Windsor, in the case of the Ministry of so-and-so, ill treatment of the Japs, club in the back of the head, diabetes mellitus, changes to the pancreas, without wasting tribunal's time, got to be an answer. We agree with you, Mr. James. Case allowed.
So what other ailments would they try not to acknowledge the government? That was one example. What are the ailments?
That's one example. Well, I mean, other examples are they would never believe that you were deaf. And they'd give you something stupid. They gave me, after my Salerno blasting, 6 to 14%. That meant only a temporary award, namely 10 shillings and sixpence a week for 2 years, and a lump sum of 40 pounds. All of that adds up to £100 compensation. And finished. And you've got got no comeback on that because they assess you as so low, 64% disabled. You're more than that. But I have no hearing at all in my right ear, but they disbelieve me. He's completely blind. Can he hear me? And all this sort of thing. They disallowed the very fact that I was blasted by Stuka bombs and that I was in the bomb cloud. They 60-40% finished. And if you become worse, so that's finished. And, you know, you could no come back on that. You had it. Lump sum £40, sign you off. Then if you come worse in years to come, you can come back and we'll consider it. Well, I didn't bother. I was so disgusted that I went for 40 years without complaining through my life, not being able to use the element of right here and so on and so forth. And it wasn't the whole lot to me personally. But anyway, that's one example. And as soon as, in 1948, when I retired, I decided to come back to them. And I said, all these years have passed by, I am now nearly completely deaf. They then sent me, willingly, without any 20% pension, without question. I could have claimed a 40 years back payment, but Margaret Thatcher, the Prime Minister at the time, said, no, I've been a little wrong, but there's no back payment.
So even in the immediate post-war period, there was, do you think there was like resentment on the part of ex-servicemen and the British Legion?
A lot.
At that early stage?
The Legion, PAT department, the Pensions of Pew Tabil department, in Pall Mall, in those days, in 1947, had a tremendous vault with manila folders. One manila folder represented one man, and they had thousands of them. They do a marvelous job, and they do all nothing. It was all from poppies. Yes, the Legion is, and even now, they will take up, they are taking up cases from the First World War and winning them. It's amazing.
So how long were you in this job for?
1947, 1948, 1949, until we get married. Left in about, got married in April, left in the early part of 1949, and we got married because we didn't. Well, in any case, it was the charity roles, we should have the money, it wasn't good enough for me as a married man, and I decided to go and do better things, so that more money. And it was goodbye to that rewarding experience, which has been with me, and I've since, years and years since, even now, I advise. Through the local and I'm getting them pensions even now.
So just briefly, your post-war career, if you could just go.
Well, that was, you know, Birmingham, then is the British Legion. I then decided that I had to earn my money, and I saw a job going as an assistant manager in an engineering firm. So I applied for the job and got it, only to find that I wasn't an assistant manager in the engineering works. It was a trick. I was assistant to the manager. However, when they realized my true merits, they made me a representative and gave me a company car. And I was their star salesman in the road springs and mechanical and engineering stuff. And I was a rep. From all those years until 19, I left that particular firm in 19, when my son was born in 1953. And I joined a rival company for double the money because they wouldn't give me whatever I was due. I was with them until 1972. They were a family firm. They sold out and sold me on the river, and I joined another spring company. 1980, when I was made redundant at 61. Well, my daughter then was 13, my two children had been off my hands. My eldest boy was a lawyer, went to Cambridge University, a brilliant boy, solicitor, with the Queen's solicitors instead, he doing his articles, and with the Queen's solicitors when he qualified as solicitor, and they gave him an opening. My other boy went to Australia. He's got 2 degrees, and my daughter was born in 1967, when I was 48. And she is now 32. And she's a college lecturer, so she went to Southampton University to teach them about good educations. And my whole purpose in life was to work and give them what I never had, a good education and security.
So your background in Wales had an impact on how...
Absolutely.
In terms of...
Absolutely. But what happened when I was very down in 1980, when I was 61, was a godsend, because I thought I was finished then, and then when I was young, 61, and my daughter was then 13, and she had a little sauce machine for grammar school and for university. I saw a job in the paper, wanting an experienced person by a property developer to sell their new houses. And I thought, I think that was the worst jobs in hell. I wrote a letter, impatiently. I mean, I didn't get a job, and I said, I was doing this job when the day war broke out, thinking, well, I won't tell you that I'm no spring chicken. I thought I'd tell you that I was doing this job the day war broke out. You must know all that. Back came the reply, we love your letter. Come in within the next half hour and see the directors. So I went into Enfield to see them, and they said, we'll all go down to Hem and Hempstead this weekend on trial. If they'd like to be, as a daughter be, if I like them, you know. But they wanted to see whether I had the talent. And they were releasing a new block of properties in Hem and Hempstead next weekend, after a lull of about 3 months. And if I was willing to go down there, they'd give me petrol money and £30 a day in my hand, and see what my results were. I went down there and I sold 13 properties. The bloke was down there saying, for Christ's sake, don't tell him you sold 13. Say you sold 8. He said, I have a sack otherwise. He said, if you sold, they say you sold 13, they probably think I'm selling too cheap. I said, I can't tell him any lies, you better tell him. He said, well, the director coming down is going to see you. Well, I said, look, I better be out of the way, because I can't tell him lies. I said, if I've sold 13, I've sold 13. You get him the bloody commission, I'm going to get petrol money and money in my hand. You tell him the lies. He told him the lies. And they thought that 8 was marvellous, and the job was mine. And I worked for them from 1982 until 1996, 14 years, the best 14 years of my life, the most money I've ever earned, and I've invested most of it, and I'm sitting pretty, thank God.
So really, your career went full circle back
That's
to
right.
where
back
it was.
To, back to what I should do immediately.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Because now, it had to be so.
Now, just in general terms, how do you think the war affected how your post-war career? How did it affect your attitude to life? I mean, how did
the war made a man of me? Before then, I mean, in the war, in the army, I met every kind of personality, every man, every kind of man. The officers, some of them were my friends, others were horrible. I had them all laid up. I had my idea of every man that I served under. I did very well in the army. The army made a man of me, and I wouldn't have missed it for the world. Now that life is over, so I'm 80 now, and looking back, I cherished the years of the army and all the comradeship and the men from the UK, from top to bottom, with my friends, and having my friends, you know, they form my life. It was the university of life for me. That was my university, the army. Did the world good. Made me what I am today. I'm still involved in military affairs, both in the British Legion and the First Army Association.
Now, just to tie up a few of the things that we've talked about earlier. We've mentioned that you turned your hand to poetry a little bit during your North African experiences, and you have a poem about Salerno, and also a poem.
I used to be good in school at composition, and I loved poetry. And I learned from a very early age the importance of poetry and the beauty of poetry and the cleverness of poetry, scanning and rhyming. It's got to be right though, you know. And I had discovered the ability to put everyday thoughts into poems. So I've written quite a few poems. And I've had, incidentally, that last weekend I visited a global flower show, and my daughter introduced me to one of the university men who she knew, because she's teaching at Harley College, teaching languages. And there's a chap there who is the local historian writing the history of the village now. And he said to me, because he knows I'm a Legion Vice President, his name is Doug Ball, and he said, "I'm glad I see you. You wrote a poem some while ago that was published in the Imperial War Museum magazine." I said, "How do you know that?" He said, "Oh," he said, "somebody told me." But he said, "I've read in the history of the village, and if you don't mind, I want your permission to put your poem at the end of the book. It's called Falls Almost Yesterday, because," he said, "I think it's very poignant, and," he said, "I think it's a fitting end to my history book of this village." So, I think it's a jackpot. I'm going to be in this history book. This history book is going to Australia and America.
But go back to the war years. Did you felt reflective about your experiences even then? Obviously, if you were writing these,
I made little notes. I've added every experience. It was tucked away in my head, and when I had the chance, I would put it on paper. And so I've composed one or two poems.
So I thought what we'd do just to end the interview would be to, if we could read the poems.